ensure that nobody who is in that jail does not need to be there. As I said, I would move away from that cash bail system to a system where we're either saying, hey, you need to stay in the jail because you're a threat to public safety, or you're not, and you shouldn't be there. And that's what I would do.
We'll go over here next. I appreciate the civility of everyone, and just want to remind everybody of the ground rules that were read at the beginning. So go ahead, state your name and the city and your question.
My name is Mitchell Paul. I live in Cleveland at University Circle. I've been indicted 3 times for telecommunications harassment. I caught the Ratners stealing. They set up a charity with Mandel money, and I'm going to give you the information here. To protect Jews from terrorism, and they stole the money. There are grants that are far in excess to the amount that they claimed as income of the charity.
So your question is?
My question is, I'm hoping all three of you gentlemen, I was wronged. The Beechwood Law Department last time lied to the grand jury. Nobody should be indicted for calling a newspaper and providing them with information. I'm hoping that all three of you will take a look at my case. It shouldn't happen to anybody. And it's just part of the, it's why we're the poorest city in America.
Okay.
Frankly, and it was funded initially with Mandel money.
Okay. All right, let Mr. On first and then Mr. Mel.
Sure, I want to make clear, I can't make any promises in any particular cases that might come in front of me. But what I will say is that we do need to be thinking about not just sort of the crimes of desperation that I was talking about earlier, but also crimes of power, right? These are cases that harm our community. We need to be looking more creatively at different things that we can enforce against. This does include crimes of certain economic dimension, things like wage theft, which is the largest form of theft in the United States. And, you know, I think that we just need to make sure that nobody, regardless of how much money they have or how powerful they are, is above the law, and that everybody is held to the same standards of accountability, whether they are just a sort of an individual like you or me, or somebody with a lot of power. Thank you.
Sir, I can tell you, I can certainly look into the case, but I can tell you, the issue that we have, though, is that if somebody's, and this is just off the top of my head, if somebody's making complaints that perhaps you're phoning them or...
I have made complaints to your office.
Okay. And so what I'm thinking is that everybody has a right to privacy, too, and they also have a right. So what we can do is I can look at your case, but you have to remember that there are laws out there, and if people say, we don't want you to contact me, that you have to respect that as well. So if people are... Well, I will look into it. I will look into it, but... Yes. Well, I don't know about what you're talking about. Okay. Well, we will look into it, but I appreciate the fact that this is bothering you. We will certainly look into it. You can call me tomorrow, and hopefully we can come to a resolution.
Okay.
All right. Okay, we'll go on to the next question. I will say, for those of you standing in the back, there's at least 2 chairs here and 3 chairs here. If somebody really needs a seat, there's seats up here, and there might be some more over there. So do make a way to your have a seat. All right. Next question.
My name is Brenda Bickerstaff. I do live in Cleveland, and I am familiar with both candidates. However, there's a question I would like to ask. I do understand there was an integrity unit in Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office, but where's the integrity? How can you implement integrity when the case is going through the system that would prevent wrongful convictions being the highest county in this state having wrongful convictions and the money is being spent and the taxpayer has to foot the bill? How would you correct that?
Okay, and that's Mr. O'Malley first.
I'm not certain I understood the whole question, but I can tell you this. We do have a conviction integrity unit. In the last 7 years since I took office, that conviction integrity unit has a rate of relief 15 times greater than the Ohio Innocence Project. In 2023 alone, there was two individuals whose convictions were overturned. So I think my unit, which is supervised by Mary McGrath, is doing a good, effective job to the point where we're doing a job 15 times better than the Innocence Project. Thank you.
So I think the question was more about sort of front-end sort of accountability to make sure that wrongful convictions don't occur in the first place, right? There are a lot of protections that we can put into place to make sure, like, hey, if we see that there's a proof issue, maybe we should look into this. But I just do want to respond regarding the Conviction Integrity Unit, which of course last year around this time, all of the external advisory members of that unit resigned in protest together because they believed that they were nothing more than window dressing for that unit, that the prosecutor's office had prejudged these cases and were not willing to take their input. This is the sort of thing that needs to be restored and strengthened. Again, maybe a place where a formerly incarcerated person needs to be a part of the conversation. In addition, I think that part of the frustration that the folks were seeing in the Conviction Integrity Unit was the practice of retrying individuals who find new evidence of their innocence and are let out of prison after 20 or 30 or 45 years. This has happened several times in the last several years in this county, and in many of these cases, the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office has chosen to take these folks back to trial on their original charges. It's a waste of public resources and of everybody's time, and we can do better than that.
Next question this side, state your name and the city you're from.
Thank you. My name is Ginger Van Wagenen. I live in Pepper Pike. I am a member of Greater Cleveland. Can I just move it down? Okay. I'm a member of Greater Cleveland Congregations, which is a nonpartisan community or nonpartisan coalition seeking social justice in our community. My concern is with juvenile bindover, and it is a deep concern for me because while I fully acknowledge the trauma of any victim of any crime, I also believe sincerely that children are children and their brains are not developed and that we are better off if we treat them as children, understanding that we have the Serious Youth Offender Program available to them.
Do you have a question?
I do. That's my preface. Mm-hmm. My question is about the extraordinary number of bindovers in our county as we compare to other counties. And I haven't seen any indication that the disparity can be addressed in full by different crime rates, especially if you isolate juvenile crime rates and isolate out the adult crime rates. And so I would love to hear more from both parties on that aspect of bindover, but in particular, in the prosecutor's answer, I would like to hear him address specifically the difference in motions for bindover versus actual successful bindovers. Okay. I heard a lot of numbers. I think I heard 12 binders, 60, 23, and I'd like to know how many motions for bindover the prosecutor filed over the last several years.
Okay. Mr. O'Malley.
Again, bindovers are never an easy issue, and the last thing we as prosecutors want to do is have a child tried as an adult. However, the revised code dictates two things. We have to look at rehabilitation, and we have to look at public safety. This year alone in Cuyahoga County, sadly, through today's date, we have 40 juveniles charged with ag murder or murder. I can tell you, we have an obligation to sit down, I don't know where Ginger went, but we have an obligation to sit down with those families and get their viewpoint. And while these are difficult decisions, and they are, I can tell you when people lose loved ones or people are shot up, for instance, like the girl at Case, that individual who did the 5 ag robberies, and that last girl, he shot her twice in the stomach. The revised code also dictates, besides rehabilitation, that we have to look towards public safety. And as I said, we have looked and we put through diversion a third of our juvenile cases, something that wasn't happening 7 years ago. But when it comes to public safety, guns, shooting, killing, attempting to kill, and doing these multiple ag robberies that are literally destroying neighborhoods and destroying people's lives, the pendulum has to swing towards public safety when we have these violent offenders. And as difficult as it is, you know, that's part of the unfortunate job that I'm tasked with. And while it's not easy, I will continue to look to protect everyone in every neighborhood.
I just want to reiterate from my early answer, trying children as adults does not actually promote long-term public safety. Children who are tried as adults and sent to adult prison are more likely to commit crimes upon their release. Okay. In addition, just to sort of recap some of the state of what's happening with bindovers here in Cuyahoga County. Over the last 5 years, Cuyahoga County has tried nearly as many children as adults as the rest of Ohio combined. And 92% of those children are black. Right? This is a trend that you can see relatively clearly going back year by year. Cuyahoga County has led the state in juvenile bindovers for some time, but the margin wasn't that large under my opponent's predecessor. But once 2017 comes around, you see a fairly substantial spike, right, without any corresponding spike in juvenile crime at the time. Instead, what we have seen is as we've lived under this policy over the last several years, now we have started to see juvenile crime spiking under my opponent's leadership. We can do better than this. We need a new approach, an evidence-based and a data-driven approach that can actually make our community safer. Thank you.
Next question.
Hi, I'm McNair Shaw from Shaker Heights.
Speak right up into the microphone.
Is this better?
Get real close to it.
This better?
A little bit more.
With the upcoming legalization of marijuana, there are going to be a number of people imprisoned for what is no longer a crime. Holding aside any sort of legislative address to this issue, how would your office work to address these people being held for completely legal activity?
Thank you. And I think Mr. Ahn's first.
This is a great question, and we are sort of at the mercy of the Ohio legislature to see what they can do or not regarding the state of the law as it goes into effect. Now, if there are folks in Cuyahoga County that are serving time for something that is going to be legal, that would be something where we would not oppose any sort of avenue that might exist. For us to get that person released, for us to make sure that that person's record may be sealed or expunged in the future. Right? But this, I think, goes to a broader question about sort of generally collateral consequences and reentry. Right? Part of what I think folks are really living under is, hey, I have this record now, and I'm maybe not in jail or prison anymore, but this thing is now legal. And we have to really take a look at what we might be able to do to ensure that those collateral consequences, and really collateral consequences for anybody who has served their time and paid their debt to society, do not prevent them from becoming a productive member of society. Because again, those barriers to that person becoming a productive member of society, that in and of itself might loop them back into the system. And so getting rid of those barriers itself is crime prevention and promotes our public safety.
Well, the state of marijuana for the last several years is that it hasn't been charged unless you're driving a Avis truck rental full of it. So the state hasn't been testing it. We haven't been charging it. So there really isn't any unless you're a mass trafficker. And even the current state of the law wouldn't allow for people to drive around in rental trucks with large quantities of marijuana. So the simple answer is there really isn't many people incarcerated. First of all, if it's a low-level amount anyhow, it would be a misdemeanor, wouldn't be in our court. to begin with. And so the only people, and even really in the last several years, even if you had a couple pounds, it wouldn't be tested. So unless you're driving a boxcar full of it, we don't have you. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Jeff Mixon. I live on the east side of Cleveland. And it costs taxpayers a lot of money to send adults and children to correctional institutions. And it looks like a lot of them are coming out more violent than they were when they went in. Is there anything that the prosecutors can do to change this? Because it really makes no sense to send someone to prison to make them more violent.
Again, Jeff, the difficulty is the people who are being incarcerated on bindovers have killed somebody, tried to kill somebody, are these people who are committing multiple ag robberies, carjackings, home invasions. And so while in a great world we could, you know, have probation where we could guarantee that they wouldn't reoffend, the sad reality is oftentimes what we're seeing is, as Matt pointed out in yesterday's article, we're seeing with people with 6 or 7 15 priors who finally have crossed the line where enough is enough. And at this point, the pendulum, again, has to swing to public safety. It's a sad reality. But let me give you the numbers. 20 years ago, we used to send in Cuyahoga County 300 juveniles to the Ohio Department of Youth Services. They had 11 facilities. Last year, we sent 70. They currently have 3 facilities. So the pendulum in the juvenile justice system has swung considerably towards rehabilitation. But even now, with the level of violence we're seeing, at some point, it has to also account for public safety. And if you've made your way into a juvenile system or into the adult system as a bindover, you have done an act that has caused that to happen. Thank you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the question, I did not understand the question to be about juveniles. I think it was about the system as a whole. And so I would just say that, you know, we want to make sure that the sentences that we as a county and that we as a prosecutor's office might be asking for, right, we want to make sure that those sentences are crafted to make sure that folks don't come back. Right, and so there are going to be some folks who will need some time in sort of, you know, they may need a timeout, right? And we need to understand when that is going to be productive, right? We are going to need to understand when it's not going to be productive. And by and large, right, one of the ways in which we can do that, again, is by thinking about that pretrial stage as, you know, where are folks needed to be in the jail and when are folks not needed to be in the jail, right? We can make that same sort of calculation at sentencing, especially at that point, right, because we should at that point understand how this person has gotten into the system in the first place, right? Is it because, right, there is some sort of issue where they are just the type of person who is like truly irredeemable? Is it because, though, maybe there's an addiction issue? Maybe there's a mental health issue? Maybe there's been an issue with lead exposure? Maybe there's issues in the home? These are the sorts of questions we should be asking proactively and that will help us make sure that we're not throwing people away.
We'll have room for about 3 or 4 more questions, so go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Merle Johnson. I'm a member of the State Board of Education. The Cuyahoga County Juvenile Detention Center has young people who probably 100% have experienced some kind of trauma on a continuous basis. And we know that the research says that trauma basically shuts down the thinking brain or the prefrontal cortex and activates the survival brain, which causes young people to make really, really not smart decisions, which is why most of them are there. The reason I'm bringing this up is because years ago, Mr. O'Malley, I met with you and shared information, basically a tutorial about trauma, because there are states that have mandated trauma-informed training for the officers or guards that are in the detention center, Tennessee, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania, to name three. I'd like to know what you have done since I met with you to make sure that the officers at the detention center have received trauma-informed training so that they don't escalate the issues that are going on with the young people there.
Merrill, it's a great question. We did meet, and we talked about that. But just so everybody understands how the juvenile detention center works, unlike the county jail, which is under the supervision of the county sheriff, the juvenile lockup is actually under the jurisdiction of the administrative judge. The administrative judge hires, fires, and manages that facility. So after we had met, I had certainly placed a call to the administrative judge suggesting that. Now, even now, they are certainly understaffed. I know that they got additional resources from county council to hire additional staffing. But certainly, I think all facets of that facility can be improved. I know there's educational issues. I know there's safety issues. I know that it's a difficult environment. Sadly, we probably have all seen the videos on the 11 o'clock news. But there are decent kids who can be turned around in that facility, and it just requires people working with them to get that done. Like I said, I did after we had met. I had provided your suggestions to the administrative judge, and ultimately they're in control of that facility. But certainly I'm willing to assist in any further way. Thank you. He asked if that was Brendan Sheehan. It is not. It is Judge Tom O'Malley, who's the administrative judge of the juvenile court facility.
One of the things we haven't talked about so far really that much is the soft power of a position like the prosecutor's office. Right? We know that these are big problems that we're talking about. Right? It's going to take all of us in order to solve some of these big and sometimes really intractable seeming problems. And the way that the prosecutor can be involved is to really proactively use that soft power, to collaborate with law enforcement officials, to collaborate with judges, and to bring other providers in as well, right? These are the kinds of things that you can use the power of the prosecutor's office to do, to get folks on the same page, to bring stakeholders together, and we need to see more of this, right? This is a town that is struggling, and the only way that we're going to get out of this is if all of us do everything that we can to work together. And so that is my pledge, is that we need to make sure that with the Juvenile Detention Center, that we are talking about, right, making sure that the providers, you know, have a meaningful opportunity to engage with kids. We need to make sure that if the workers there are trying to unionize, that we're not getting in the way of that, that we need to make sure that these systems are going to work well. And sometimes it takes more than just a phone call. Sometimes it takes a lot more effort to move folks and to get them moving in the same direction. That is the kind of thing that I will fight for day in and day out. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Christine Russo. I'm from Strongsville. And I was curious, Mr. Ahn, in your platforms, how are you going to implement those platforms and implement and make full use of Marcy's Law and the victims that these crimes have affected?
That's a great question. And a case should be started with a conversation with the victim, with a conversation with the victim's families. That has to be the starting point. And that is, I think, the key idea behind Marcy's Law. I do intend to really try to follow the spirit of that law, right? Not just necessarily the letter of it. Because we are seeing oftentimes, you know, on the campaign trail, I have been talking with a lot of victims of crime. It is all too common for us to, for folks in our community to be victims of crime. And we need to understand, right, what the victim is thinking about, how they're approaching what has happened to them, and, right, what things they need. We want to make sure that victims are supported from start to finish at all phases of the case and have meaningful input into what they see is happening. This is one of the things that I would like to make sure that, you know, our the prosecutor's office is doing more proactively. I want to make sure, right, that victims are being kept informed about what things are happening. You know, I've talked with a lot of folks who have been victims who are saying, you know, there are certain things where they're not really brought along. They may not be notified. That can't happen. We want to make sure that the victims understand and have ownership over what's happening in the prosecutor's office. Thank you.
I didn't know Ms. Russo would be here tonight, but it was her son who was killed in that tragic Strongsville car crash. And your pledge to not file discretionary bindovers is absolutely contrary to the words that you just spoke. And she and her family and her son deserve their day in court. Not my day in court, not your day in court, their day in court. And I know what her position was on that case. It was that she wanted the individual who murdered her son and murdered her son's friend to be held accountable. And that means listening. That means not prejudging, and that makes not making a platform and a commitment not to bind over discretionary cases, because sometimes it's simply needed. And I only hope that my office has brought your family some sense of closure. It's tragic, but I can tell you that's why we truly have to look at each case individually. And we do that in my office. Thank you.
This has been really, really a powerful experience tonight. And I know there's lots of people. There's more questions. We do have a hard stop because we need to be out of the building by 8 o'clock. So I'm going to ask for one question here, and I'm sorry, one question here. And if your topic has already been covered, maybe make room for someone else. So let's start over here.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Sharon Grant Burton from Maple Heights, Ohio. I am a retired educator. I have done some work for CMSD in the Juvenile Detention Center, and I was appalled of what I seen. And so I heard both Mr. O'Malley and Mr. Hahn, I've heard you both talk about rehabilitation. What does that actually look like? Because I can tell you, you've seen the videos, you've talked to Justice for Our Youth Task Force. I'm a member of that. I spoke at City Council, and they were all up in a roar for a moment. These are repeat offender kids. What does rehabilitation actually look like? Because it's not happening. Please don't sit here and tell the people it's happening. It's not happening. Tell me, what does that look like, and what will it look like under Mr. Hahn, if you're elected, or Mr. O'Malley, or whoever is under you? What does that actually look like?
Thank you.
It has to look like every kid coming out of that facility is in a better place than when he arrived. That's what it has to look like. And we as a community, because as you know, those issues didn't start in that facility. They started in their previous school, they started in their home, they started in their family. And so if you ended up there as a juvenile who ended up there, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the ground floor in all of those areas, because as you and I talked before this meeting, There's not one single issue that you can point to in any one kid that says that's the reason. It's a whole variety of factors that are causing the delinquency, the violence that we're seeing today. So I do think that we as a county have to increase our resources into our social service agencies and get in the homes early and work with families and work with the families and the schools so that we can get these kids off in the right direction. Because as you know, oftentimes when they are in that facility, it's not the first one. It's their third, fourth, fifth, sixth go-around. And we just have to do a better job as a community up front before they get to that point. Thank you.
I will say, early intervention really is key. And understanding, right, in somebody's first contact with that system, let's ask that question. What is happening in the home? What is happening in the school? What is happening in terms of mental health? Are there issues with addiction? Are there issues with lead exposure? All of these questions need to be asked right at the outset. And these are the things that we need to make sure that there are services in place to provide support for these kinds of issues as they get identified. But it's not just necessarily right once we get to the juvenile court system, because many of the individuals who are coming through our juvenile court system are folks who may have or may have previously had open child and family services cases. And so, you know, my opponents made some allusion to the idea that I, may not have, some kind of knowledge or something about this area. But we need to also take a look at what the prosecutor's office is doing in these child and family services cases, right? Is the current rate, for example, of emergency removals appropriate? Or are some of these cases more appropriate for protective supervision so that we keep family units together and prevent some of the trauma that may build on itself and lead somebody to interact with the juvenile justice system? And so we need to really think bigger about this and really take every avenue that we have in order to create rehabilitation that turns into crime prevention.
Thank you.
And now the last question before our two-minute closing statements.
Thank you. My name is Pat Dillard. I'm from Cleveland Heights. And I want to ask a question about restorative justice. This is a concept that's been used across the country, and to my knowledge, it's not being used here. It's based on the concept that most victims of crime are not vindictive. They want this person, whoever did the crime, to not hurt anybody else, to not do it again. And that's what it's all based on, bringing the person who has committed the crime with the person together who was the victim. So I wanted to ask both people, is this being done here, and what is your opinion of it?
Thank you.
Thank you. my understanding is that a restorative justice pilot is sort of getting started in the juvenile court system. This is something that I think is a really key piece of making sure that our victims are supported from start to finish over the course of a case. Restorative justice pilots have gone really well everywhere across the country. Now, this is something I do want to clarify that a victim has to opt into, right? There, certainly with Marcy's Law, and certainly I would not ask a victim that would not be willing to participate in this kind of program to do so. But this is the kind of option that I think should be available to a victim that wants it, right? This is part of the universe or the constellation of supports that we can provide to victims to ensure that they can sort of start to process and to heal through from some of what has been done to them if they choose to. If they don't, it's certainly not anything that we want to push them into, but I think it is absolutely something that they should have the option to do if they choose to do so.
Thank you.
We have already done that in Cuyahoga County on select cases where we do bring the victims and we have brought the defendants into the same room with agreement. I recall one vividly in my office where two individuals got into a gun battle and accidentally shot their child's grandfather. And while he lived, he was very forgiving. And he wanted both of those individuals to make peace. So in my office, we brought them in. We had a lengthy discussion. One of the individuals, I vividly remember, had worked at Lincoln Electric. And he lost his job. But he didn't lose his hope. So I brought them in. We talked. I reprimanded them about the dangers of guns and how if you have one, you'll probably use it. I made him forfeit his gun. And then we dismissed the case after they shook hands, they hugged, and agreed to live peaceful lives. And neither of them had a record at that point. But it was the right thing to do, and we did it. Thank you.
I want to thank our two candidates and all of you for making this an amazing set of conversations. And now we want to give Mr. O'Malley his two-minute closing statement, and then Mr. Ahn.
I just want to say it's a pleasure to be here. Again, like I said at the beginning of this program, that there is, in my opinion, no more difficult job than to try to keep this community safe and balance that with rehabilitation and trying to do what's right. And it's easy to not have been part of the system and make guesses as to what's wrong. Earlier you indicated something about the judges should deliberate and then determine what they were going to do. Well, I can tell you judges do that every day. And it's not going to take Mike O'Malley to be prosecutor or Matt Ahn to be prosecutor. Judges have a difficult job. And that's why you will never, ever hear me criticize a judge for a sentence imposed. I may not agree with it personally, but I'll never open my mouth because they have a difficult job. We have gotten a lot accomplished in my 7 years, whether it's the Adult Diversion Center, the Juvenile Intervention Center. Great things have happened within our county, all while COVID was going on, reducing the amount of people in the county jail, starting our self-defense committee, where we've had over 100 people exonerated because of self-defense issues, including dozens of homicides. None of it's easy. But I have a staff, some of whom are here, who are dedicated to keeping our community safe. And they do that every day. And I'm proud of the work we do. I'm proud of the staff, the court employees who do what they do. But I can tell you, again, we have a very difficult job. It's easy to sit on the sidelines or not having been involved. But we do a good job. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. It has truly been an honor to share with you a little bit about my philosophy for how to make our communities stronger and safer. The research tells us that the early intervention, evidence-based sentencing, and timely accountability prevent crime and make our communities safer, improve public safety. Common sense tells us that transparency and accountability in the prosecutor's office, reduce the burden on our judges, our law enforcement, and our communities. Right? But again, this is not necessarily what's happening in our prosecutor's office right now. We have a crisis of leadership. A strong leader gives you a vision of a better future rather than personal attacks. A strong leader is accountable to the residents of Cuyahoga County rather than to their political allies. A strong leader, right, engages with people, with communities, with our Dem clubs, and with party initiatives consistently rather than just at election time. Right? I am the only candidate in this race who can say that they've lived these values for their entire career, both in civil and in criminal work. and I will fight for your community and my community every day as your prosecutor by targeting the crimes that harm our community, by building an office in the people's interest, by working to break the cycle of trauma, and by supporting rehabilitation through services. Once again, my name is Matthew Ahn, and I hope that you'll join me on March 19th and in the years to come as we build justice for all in Cuyahoga County. Thank you.
I just want to thank all of you for being civil and for participating in this active, interactive forum. And I want to turn it over to Linda and thank her for the leadership that she and Tony did. Put us on.
Just want to wrap things up here. Again, thank you all very much. Let's have another round of applause for our candidates and our moderator. We appreciate you all being here, obviously.